Hello and welcome to A Marvelous Lunch Break. On today's show, no surprise, Mystique's alive. Wolverine meets his female counterpart and fills her full of his hot goo.
Oh no.
Cyclops takes a bit of a rough turn, but it's Jean Grey who gets sent for an early shower. And sells out the only thing that can mutate, a Storm gets a new voice box. That's right, this week we're talking about 2003's X2, or if you paid attention to the small print, X-Men 2, X-Men United, or no X2 United, or X-Men 2 United, or, as some people fondly know it, X-Men, the last one where everything makes sense. We'll be discussing all of this and the rest, but first, joining me today as always, Miss Marvel herself, Anna Harrison.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm great, thank you.
You thought about a new nickname yet? Got any ideas?
I'm pretty attached to Miss Marvel. Miss Marvelous?
And of course, Agent Martin Carter.
Hello.
Anything new for you?
No, I was hoping someone would send some on Instagram, but they haven't. So please do send them in. I'm still binge eating after Christmas. So the blob is still highly relevant.
Okay.
That's how I feel.
And the blob himself, Martin Carter.
Oh no!
I'm fine. Doesn't have the same ring to it, but whatever. So we're back, episode 2, woo-hoo, season 2. Are we feeling good to talk about this movie? Are you excited for it, or are you...
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what? I'm having a great time. Like, I thought this was going to be terrible. I was dreading season 2.
Fair enough.
That's so good to
but
hear.
These films are good. I'm having a good time.
Oh, man.
Well, that's good to hear.
I don't think Anna agrees for that shudder.
No, I'm worried about
what's to come.
Well, you're in now.
Yeah.
And we can't, it'd be very sort of typical of X-Men if we just broke continuity free episode and you disappeared.
But I also feel like, you know, like when you do a long run and you get those little gel sachets and they perk you up a little bit. Mm. I feel like because we're doing little specials of like actual films that I anticipate being good, like Miss Captain Marvel and the next Avengers, I feel like I'm going to have a lull in X-Men nurse, and then I'm going to get a little gel sachet of good 2019 Marvel, and it'll keep me going. So okay. I'm feeling good.
Excellent.
I'm excited for you, and I'm excited for me as well, because I enjoy watching this movie.
Me
but
too.
We'll get into it in a little bit. First off, if you're joining us again, if you've been with us before, or if you're a new listener this round from around the world this week, thank you for tuning in. There are spoilers in this podcast if you've never listened to it before, but if you've not seen a movie that came out in 2003 yet, then... Really, at this point, I can't help you.
And go to your local charity shop. Every charity shop seems to have
all of them.
The X-Men DVDs in.
Yeah.
The Cerebro collection. Yeah. So please remember, if you are listening to it, review the podcast, subscribe to it if you like it, so that you can get more of this in your ears. We are running fortnightly on season 2. And if you go over to our Instagram,
yeah,
A Marvelous Lunch Break,
there is a list of watch dates so that you can watch along with us, which is super exciting because this year there's a ton of new Marvel movies. Anna, what have we got on the schedule this year?
Well, as Martin's already mentioned, we've got the super exciting Captain Marvel coming our way soon. Another trailer clip released very recently. It was so good. And then we've got Avengers Endgame, equally exciting. We've got Spider-Man Far From Home. So much stuff.
And we've got X-Men.
Yes, and we've got all the X-Men leading up to the big reveal of X-Men Dark Phoenix.
It's going to be exciting. I'm really excited for that.
Dark Phoenix, though, it sounds like a MySpace name that I'd have an underscore and an X at the end. Like Dark Phoenix underscore XO. Like it's very seen, isn't it?
It is.
I can't argue
with canon, though.
I think that's coming back, though. You know, I'm growing a fringe out at the minute.
Oh, no.
I feel like it's all... I think like we're having a bit of a renaissance. Mm. You know how people look back on, like, 20 years ago and say, oh, we're going through, like, an 80s revival.
Mm. It's too early
for that.
We
went through a 90s revival.
No, I think we're still doing 90s.
I think we're going through a late 2000s revival.
Oh, God, based on some of the outfits that we've been seeing, I really hope not.
And usually at this point, we go straight into the cast. But...
Oh yes,
we've got a new segment to the show. Seeing as though this is our lunch break.
Oh thank God!
What snacks do we have today?
Oh, I don't care. I'm just eating.
What
it.
Is
I'm
it?
So hungry.
We've got four of them. We've got a special guest.
So these are so Milky Bar is not something I had ever encountered in America. It's a British thing. I don't know if they're over there now, but I certainly never encountered them before. And I'm a big fan of Milky Bar. Yes, yes, it is. And so that is what has super intrigued me about this. And Dan hasn't let us eat our snack for ages because he wanted us to do it.
I've been sat here for like 45 minutes waiting for this.
Oh, that is so weird. So this is the Milky Bar milk slice. To be fair, I also took them out of the refrigerator.
It's like a less dry Twinkie. Like, I find Twinkies quite dry. Mm.
Okay, like so for our international listeners, a Milky Bar is a small
white chocolate
bar. It's just plain white chocolate. Yeah. And a Twinkie, for our British listeners who've not been to an American sweet shop yet.
Or seen an American movie ever.
Yeah, what is a Twinkie?
What is a Twinkie? It's like a sponge
finger.
Yeah, a sponge finger with a little injection of cream running through the middle.
But like the world's smallest injection
of cream. The smallest injection of cream.
Oh, we'll come on to injections of cream a little bit later in today's podcast. But trying this out, so what do you think? This is a mashup of the Milky Bar and the Twinkie.
That's fine, I've smashed that in.
Yeah, it's great.
A little bit claggy.
Yeah, I'm good though. Mm. Maybe become a new thing, like childish snacks at the beginning of our podcast.
I thought it was going to be, like the first, as soon as it hit my mouth, I was like, this is going to be dry.
Do they have to stay refrigerated, or can we give one away on the podcast?
I don't know. All I can say is...
Like, we've got one left. If anybody wants one, send me your address in the DMs, and I'll send you it.
Well, it doesn't say. I know I got it out of the fridge. I've been keeping it in the fridge. Oh, consume up to 6 hours from fridge. So if you live within a six-hour radius...
Of our fridge. Right.
Anyway, that was fun.
Right.
Cool.
Good.
Anyone got any other snacks? You're both on the water.
Yeah. Yep. You've got a protein shake.
I'm on a chocolate smooth protein shake.
New year, new me.
New year, new me. I won't say the brand name until they sponsor us, but it's available from the internet.
Do you know who could do a really great new year, new me joke? Mystique.
Oh, yeah. Well,
you can imagine New Year's Eve. She'd have the right balance, wouldn't she? She'd be like, new year, new me, and then just transform into something.
Well, speaking of transformations, this season we went from the roundup, so the one-minute roundup, we had feedback in between the break saying that it'd be a pretty good segment if you got better at it.
Yeah.
Did you hear
I haven't heard from her again. Sorry. Yeah, if you're out there, tell me what you think.
Sorry we were so disparaging last episode.
Well, please. Scared her off.
Go over to our Instagram if you're watching this, and there'll be a video recording of Anna trying to attempt getting this under 1 minute. Last week, you were successful.
Yeah, just.
This week. You feeling good?
I'm feeling good.
You feeling strong? Okay. I need to get a timer.
I hope my voice levels don't go down because I've got to scoot over just a little bit.
Somewhere. You know what? There's a clock in the room.
Go on, it's nearly.
I'm just going to watch the clock.
All right.
Okay.
Tell me when.
So in 3, 2, 1, go.
Professor X, evolutionary voiceover, segues into epic White House attack by the two-toed, blue-skinned, devilish Nightcrawler, unsuccessfully trying to stab the president in the name of mutant freedom. As Storm and her new wig lead educational field trips, a grouchy General Stryker is getting the go-ahead from POTUS to attack school children. And while Bobby and Rogue battle sexual frustration, Logan rolls back into town from his failed memory quest to flirt and babysit the X-Brats. Stryker's attack plan is a go, and after stopping armed men from shooting sleeping children, Logan and the main X-teens make their escape to Iceman's parents' house. But Stryker gets his hands on Cerebo Scott and Professor X while an awkward family convo is interrupted by trigger-happy cops. A timely arrival from Storm, Nightcrawler, and Keep everyone from getting barbecued by extra-liquid pyro. Halfway. Professor X is no mental match for Stryker's sinister son, and it turns out the General's master plan is to psychically squish all mutant brains. But freshly prison break Magneto and his super awesome sidekick Mystique join the remaining X-Men, and after some inappropriate smooching, it's time for a daring rescue. Things are looking grim when brainwashed Scott attacks Logan, gets his ass kicked by his lady counterpart, and Magneto turns the tables to squish human brains instead. But the X-Men are victorious until Jean is forced to sacrifice herself to get the X-Jet in the air, and after tears and a quick stop to threaten the president, the X-Group returns to the classroom as Jean's evolutionary voiceover sets up our next X-Adventure. Yes!
Oh. Again.
Oh, last word.
2 weeks in a row, you've been pushing this right to the minute.
You need to trim down like one word off the end.
You know, you could just say less words, right?
I could, but what if the copywriting suffers?
I don't think anyone can understand it anyway.
Ah, well, you say that. So this week on the Instagram, we're going to be posting an Instagram story that's going to have the text on it. So if you think you can do better, listeners, the text will be made available to you. So give it a try.
So do you think, you
well,
know...
How come I'm not going to get any applause anymore? Thanks, guys.
Well done. We'll start making sure we get the applause in there from episode 3. Nice and prompt.
Well done.
Thank you.
Really valiant effort. And I tell you what, watching it back, after listening to it two or three times, I suddenly was able to make sense of it.
Great.
Pretty good. So I wasn't the only one who was confused about this film a little bit.
I mean, there's a lot of stuff that happens in it, definitely.
There's a lot of stuff.
A lot of stuff.
But there's not many new faces. Let's run down the cast. Ooh. Couple of new faces, but cheers and applause.
Okay.
Or boos and hisses, depending on what you thought they were like in this movie. With the MCU, we had like a different cast every movie. Where this one, I think we're just going to be spamming the same 8 or 9 names most of the time. Hugh Jackman.
Woo!
Yeah.
Patrick Stewart.
Yes.
Yeah. Ian McKellen.
Yes.
Yes.
Are you a yes this week? You're a...
Yeah, I liked him better in this one. Okay. Less flying.
Famke Janssen.
Yeah.
How did women do that with their hair?
I don't know.
It's like that. Like I was like, how do you twist the roller brush to get that kind of that flick?
It was like that razor bushy flick. Feather cut thing. There were some rough outfits by Jean Grey again.
And so I was like, I'm going to wear the color of my character at all times.
That polyester deep V blouse with the choker and the chain. that is some intense early 2000s look there.
Rebecca Romijn.
Yes, forever.
And we got to see her in normal skinness.
James Marsden. Bit one note, one eye.
Do you know what I noticed? I noticed it quite early on in the thing, and next time he's in it, it's in the next one, I think he's decided to act with his teeth. So like, because obviously you can't see his eyes, which is like a main bit of acting. Watch how much he uses his mouth and his teeth to display his feelings. I can't do it because we're an audio.
He does a lot of that.
Yeah, he's no, quite, I know what you mean.
So last stand, watch his teeth. That's someone gave him a note at the end of the first X-Men film to be like, we need to see more from you.
Yeah, and give us more mouth.
To give us more mouth. That's what he did. Well,
give them more mouth.
Wolverine gave more mouth.
We've got Halle Berry.
Yay. Anna Paquin. A little more enthusiastic.
Anna Paquin.
Yes. Yeah,
sorry, who's Anna?
Rogue.
Oh, yeah, I love her. Yeah. She's great.
We've got the other Brian Cox, a Stryker.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, suitably sinister.
Alan Cummings as Nightcrawler.
Yes. Oh.
I'm not a big fan of him in general.
I think you'd make a good Nightcrawler cosplay.
I think that'd be good.
That's homophobic.
What?
But Nightcrawler's not.
No, I don't feel like me doing any sort of accent at any public event.
You don't need to do an accent, but he's German. You've got the right frame. You can zip from room to room.
Yeah, you've got that like lithe, lanky.
Right. Anything else?
Moving on.
I'm not going to Manchester painted blue. Can you imagine me sat on the Trans-Pennine Express?
Is Nightcrawler a member of the community? Have I just completely...
I don't think so.
No.
Skipped over
this. No, because he has a thing with Storm, doesn't he?
Yeah. I'm trying to think of actual canon. I don't think so. Anyway.
Alan Cummings gay, though.
Right. Okay, that's where I was being homophobic.
Yeah.
Apologies. I didn't know that. I was going purely on the haircut.
That's even worse. It's even more homophobic.
And of course, your tail.
At least you didn't say the teeth. So.
Well, duly noted, and apologies. Aaron Stanford as Pyro.
No,
greasy. No.
I can't make the flame, but I can control them.
Oh, he's so creepy.
No one cares.
Useless. Kelly Hu as Lady Deathstrike.
Does she have any lines in this film?
I think she has one.
I was brushing up on it again before we came into here, and I was trying to remember what she sounded like.
She has literally one line when she asks that office worker what he's doing when he's mystique in disguise. And
here's what she sounds like.
Oh.
Great.
And then we've got Bruce Davison briefly back as Senator Kelly, or Mystique, kind of.
Yeah, fine.
Yeah.
Oh, no, wait. Sorry.
What about Bobby?
I was just going to say. What about Bobby?
Oh, Bobby.
Sean Bobby. Ashmore.
He's so dreamy.
I don't know any of these people's names.
He's still a beating heart.
Very good at cooling a beer.
Yeah, he is.
Cast notably a few missing. No Sabretooth.
No Toad.
Thank God.
Apparently, there was supposed to be a fight scene between Nightcrawler and Toad, but... I've forgotten the actor that plays Toad. He was unavailable.
Ray Park.
Yes, Ray Park.
Sorry, Ray Park.
Like, conveniently unavailable. Like, we tried calling him, like, three times.
But he was electrocuted and thrown in the lake. Oh, yeah. So, you know, he was dead. Before we get into it, then, the opening scene of this movie, big question. Can humans and mutants share the world? What do you think?
Well, I mean, this is obviously a sort of overarching question of the entire franchise, basically. I mean, that opening scene, I flipping love it. That I remember being in the cinema and seeing that White House attacks, like at the Nightcrawler, like bamfing in and out of locations. And I thought, like, actually, it still really held up. I thought it looked really good.
Yeah,
really good.
I agree. I mean, I think these films like to open with a big question and just make no headway in answering it.
Can they share the world?
And then it's like, and then the conclusion of the film is not even the person who asked the question at the start.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, we'll just see. But the White House flashy thing. So the ones that happen in the later films, which are like the slow mo bits with Quicksilver, is that meant to be like an updated version of that? Because the kind of circular camera work of Nightcrawler, I thought there was like a similarity. Are they meant to reference each other, or is that just?
I mean, I don't know.
Coincidence.
Idea. It'll be interesting to see, actually. So now that you've mentioned that, like if.
Because it's kind of slow-mo operatic music. I don't know whether they were meant to, or they were connected.
It could very well be that, like, in later films, they did do things that were referential to the originals, like to sort of keep at least some feeling of continuity, to have sort of similar framing devices, similar camera shots. I can't say that when I watched that scene, my mind immediately went to the Quicksilver piece.
Okay, mine did.
Yeah, that's interesting.
But I thought this, again, the CGI is kind of holding up in that bit, like the smoke effects, I thought it's still quite good.
I
thought the opening scene was cracking.
Yeah.
And especially when he just stabs the knife in at the end. It's like mutant freedom now.
But I've got to ask, so, I mean, spoilers, obviously, but you then find out that Stryker was the one, I'm really far away from the mic now. Stryker was the one who orchestrated that whole attack. Like, he was, had put the serum in Nightcrawler's neck to do that. So, I guess, I don't know if Stryker was just banking on the fact that the Secret Service would scare him off. Because surely if the president gets killed, like, Stryker's not going to be able to roll out the rest of his plan? I mean, I guess it would have worked either way.
Like, immediately after that, he gets agreement to put his plan in action.
To attack a bunch of small children.
So it's like, do you think that his plan was just to scare the president into making a decision onto something, or if the president had been killed with this knife, do you think he'd just get enough support immediately that it'd be like, who's doing the mutant thing, get him
bank on a new president doing that sort of thing, wouldn't you?
That's true.
Yeah, which is, I mean, you think if someone says mutant freedom now, you know, it's like, come on, give them
freedom. Mutants are free at this point. I mean, they're kind of shunned and have, you know, they don't have society's kind of acceptance, but they are free.
So because it seems like the Mutant Registration Act at this point hasn't been rolled out. I don't know, maybe if it's a commentary on like things that we're supposed to just take for granted are taking place behind the scenes, like maybe the mechanism of government is moving that way. But yeah, it does seem like an overly forceful statement for not much information about what is actually taking place. So,
do you think Liberation didn't fit on the little tag?
Maybe.
That they had?
Maybe.
Do you think that like it was a bit short sighted of Magneto and Mystique to put Mystique in a political situation, because she's clearly been playing the senator who they killed in the first movie for a while, because he seems to still be carrying out his day to day job in the White House.
Yeah.
And then as soon as Stryker turns up, immediately just gets overruled. And it's like, oh, your opinions are useless. We're going with this Stryker guy. And it's like, you know, Mystique is a mutant, but not a politician.
I think she was biding her time for the information.
Yeah.
So, like, the president didn't know anything about Magneto, really. It was kind of a hidden ops sort of thing, wasn't it? So I think she was playing that role until she got the information that she needed, rather than the access.
Yeah, I think so too.
Because I think she was like, well, if they give me access, great, I'll just go in and get him. But if not, at least I know where he is now and I know how to go into that.
Too. And you don't think that she was trying to influence the political landscape at all? It was just purely about
I mean, I imagine that was sort of like a side goal, like while she's doing it, you know, having like, you know, Stryker makes reference to like, oh, you've really changed your stance and opinion. So I have to assume that Kelly's like withdrawn, as Mystique has, you know, withdrawn all support from the Registration Act, has started making kind of impassioned pleas for mutant equality. But yeah, I as well sort of got, my interpretation was that she was just trying to figure out what information she could get to spring Eric.
Fair. Mm. Interesting. Well, she must have put some hours into that as a day job, though, to still get, like,
twisted.
You know what I mean?
The logistics of that must have been not fun for her.
Yeah, it's like, even if you turn up looking exactly like someone, surely it's a little bit like, didn't you get fired for not turning up to work for 5 weeks? Okay, we'll let you in.
But do you remember that, like, office worker urban legend about a guy who, like, just didn't turn up to work for, like, 8 years and got, like... paid and stuff because he worked in a really like niche
still got
job
salary.
Role by himself, and maybe he's just doing that. Santa Kelly's working from home again.
Oh yeah. I mean, you are right with what you're saying. This gets complicated, and we move around quite a lot again at the start. We did that in the other movie in X1, but in this one we got a lot of moving around right at the start. We get an update on where Wolverine is, sniffing things out at the lake, and then we go to the students at the museum.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a weird scene.
Yeah.
I think it's weird. What do you guys think about it?
Well, I think, like, I feel all these scenes, there was so much information being crammed into all of them. So you've got, like, the school trip where you're getting a sense that Jean's having some issues with her powers. Scott's making promises he can't keep. And then you've got the scene that shows, like, you know, Pyro's a dick. So there's, like, there's a lot of stuff happening in every scene. I don't know, I like that scene because it's anytime the mutants are interacting in the real world, particularly the children, I like that scene. They're kind of negotiating their landscape, like that little boy who sticks out his like little lizard tongue at that girl and scares her and gets chastised for it and everything. I like seeing the human mutant interactions outside of the school, outside of the battlefield, so I did appreciate that.
What do you think of Charles Xavier's ability to stop time?
Does he stop time?
Well, this is... I don't know.
It's confusing.
The TV keeps going.
I think he just
the end, yeah.
Like, freezes people in that particular location.
What if someone walks in?
So I
get froze.
What's going on in here?
This is the bit I find confusing. So, like, in the cafeteria scene, it seems like he was, in fact, freezing everyone. But then, in the very end scene, when he does the same thing again, I wasn't sure if the whole thing wasn't just taking place inside the president's head.
Ooh.
And then...
Yeah, so I think that was happening at the end.
Yeah.
That it was taking place in his head. Brief. Oh, no, actually.
So then the folder gets on the desk somehow.
Yeah, so they must have stopped time.
But he doesn't stop time.
He's doing a live broadcast, though.
Yeah, that's what I thought as well. So I thought it must be taking place inside his head. But then we've had this previous shot that's established that Charles is, in fact, able to freeze everyone.
But when he freezes everyone, right, time can't stop because the TVs in the cafeteria at this museum are still working. So surely if someone was watching the TV, as soon as time freezes, like, why did it skip a bit? And then... Surely if you stop time, the people in the TV studio would have stopped as well, or is he... I don't know.
I don't know. Feels like a particular power that we cannot pull at the thread of.
No, I mean, of all the things that we need to understand in this film, probably
that's probably pretty low in there.
What do you think is the big thing we need to understand in this film? As if it doesn't jump too far ahead.
Oh, what is the big thing?
I think the big thing...
Why didn't Colossus get more screen time? That's my big question.
Especially when he was topless.
Why didn't Henry McCoy get more screen time?
Well, apparently he was supposed to, and it kind of got edited out. I mean, to be fair, while we did have a lot of returning cast members, there were like some new faces and like people that we were supposed to focus on a bit more than the previous one. So I think too many new mutants with too many new powers, I think, would have shifted the balance. So you also have Nightcrawler. You need to pay more attention to Bobby Drake, to Pyro. And we got so much more screen time with Mystique, which I super appreciated. Mm. So I wouldn't have wanted to sacrifice that for anyone else. But yes, I agree. More shirtless Colossus would have been very welcome. Mm.
And Colossus is a hero at the sort of, well, a bit of a hero. At the so Striker's raid on the school.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Which I is love like
the
scene.
Sort of the thing that sort of kickstarts everything in this movie going.
Yeah.
Is him turning up with loads of baddies. Armed,
yeah.
Miscellaneous so, baddies.
I mean, it's kind of an amazing feat of coincidence for Striker, because you've got Jean and Storm are gone chasing Nightcrawler. And then you've got Scott and Professor X in the plastic prison, which we need to talk about.
But so that's orchestrated. He did that on purpose.
To capture them there.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he didn't, like... Did he get them to come? Like, why did they go there in the first place again? I can't remember.
They went to chat to Magneto about something, I guess.
And then they got Deathstruck.
Yeah, Deathstruck.
But
right.
But he, you know, he wouldn't... I don't think he'd have attacked the school with them there. He made sure they were out of the way first before he...
Which is, he didn't know Jean Grey and Storm wouldn't be there, though.
No, I guess
he... And I think, actually, they're quite formidable as enemies. Like, definitely more formidable than Cyclops. Like, I wish I'd just leave him.
Oh, man. During the Deathstrike fight as well, it's very clear. All you have to do is hold his arms down, and he can't, like, fire his helmet thing.
But he identifies that there's the X-Jet in the parking... area.
Oh, and it's gone.
So maybe, and he's got the images, he's got the satellite images of that, so maybe he waited for a time where he's like, oh, they're out. X-Jet's out. They're gone.
Yeah, let's get the kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really like the attack on the manor.
Agreed.
I especially like Rogue's response to watching Wolverine kill someone. I think it's quite grounded in, like, these people maybe not experienced,
because
you expect, oh, they've got powers, and we talked about in the first episode that they're not trained, like, it's called a training facility by Stryker, but they're not experienced fighters or anything like that, so actually it's Colossus and Wolverine who do the heavy lifting.
Yeah, and there. Bobby was so scared too, like, when he was in the kitchen and had written, like, Wolverine asked him if he's okay,
he was just kind of, like, hidden, wasn't he?
Yeah, I really like, I think you're absolutely right. I really enjoyed that, seeing that.
The balance was quite good, I think.
Definitely. And the small children, is like, I think that was a kind of interesting moment as well, because, like, the narrative that's pushed by the anti-mutant people is that these people are dangerous. These children are dangerous. They have powers maybe they can't control, and, you know, on and on that narrative. But then to actually see these children getting attacked and to using their powers, like, reactively, still wasn't enough to save them in a lot of cases, other than the girl who ran through the walls and the girl for a little bit who was screaming. But it was really powerful to see these commandos, these armed men coming in and shooting at sleeping children in their beds. It was, just all motivated by this fear. I thought it was a really breathtaking scene.
It was really good, and I think it still stands up as well.
Yeah, definitely.
I think if it was made today, there'd be less beige. It smells quite beige in general.
And it is, a lot of the scenes which could have been lighter are quite dark as well. Like, it doesn't feel like there's much reason for it to be dark. It's just, let's make it dark and all in sewers.
That's such a common cinematic thing that drives me insane. Like, I'm rewatching all the Game of Thrones at the moment, and, like, some of the scenes, like, you just can't see what's happening. Oh, it drives me crazy.
Put big light on.
Yeah, just turn brightness.
I mean, they're literally shining a helicopter's headlights through the like, there should be some light.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's light at the end of the tunnel.
Oh, here we go.
Who escapes.
Did we ever find out what happens to the one? Because they said we caught about half of the children. Yeah. What?
So half of them escaped with Colossus, like, through the sewers, and then...
They're in the... Yeah. They're captured, aren't they? Sorry.
Yes, my bad.
Oh, just having a shake-up. Going on. This is where we'd have an advertising break if
Do you want me to just make up some advertising?
Was to sponsor us.
Lord.
Or carry on.
But actually, so the lead up to this attack as well, because before we have the guys attacking the school, you see, like, Charles rendered completely helpless. Like, he's in the plastic prison with Magneto. Magneto's, like, he's realized that Magneto's been, like, tortured and, like, revealed all this information. And I thought that was, like, a really intense moment when the gas comes in and, like Charles falls out of his chair, and it just really like struck me how like super helpless he was. And then so that to like kind of segue into like the helplessness of the children, I thought worked really well.
I feel like Xavier's way underpowered in this movie.
Underpowered.
He gets carried quite a lot, doesn't he?
He gets like a lot of carry, and he's very vulnerable.
He almost squishes the entire world's brain.
But like under someone else's mind control. So yeah, it's like he has the power to kill everyone in the world, but yet the person who's controlling his mind couldn't just do that. He's a bit underpowered. You think Charles Xavier is someone who could like, you know.
Yeah.
Just he could control anyone, but different from what we saw in the first movie. And I think maybe some of that whole first movie is part of his vulnerability about, you know, how he didn't see certain things coming in the first movie, and you know how they got to him in Cerebro with the you know Mystique's little sabotage of it. But
oh yeah,
you know it'd be good to see him put up a little bit of a fight. Come on, man.
Yeah, that's true. That was definitely lacking from this film.
But we get them all escaping the school. As you mentioned, Storm and Jean Grey are off getting Nightcrawler on the team.
Yeah.
But at the same time, in this like perfectly executed attack, Xavier's at the prison, as you mentioned.
Yeah.
And that's where we get the whole prison as a concept is just great.
Yeah.
Plastic prison, and I think the scenes that we get in it, all of Magneto's scenes in it are incredible, and it's good to see him as without a silly helmet on, right?
Yeah,
and there's just really clever touches in that prison as well, like when he escapes from it and he's about to step out onto one of his silver discs, you can just see a little sign that's on the floor that says like careful 100-foot drop or something. It's like they've really thought about all the detail of it. That's quite good. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
They're like a big empty room with a big drop, don't they?
Yeah.
Cerebro, yeah. The plastic prison.
Yep.
Look for the visitor.
Where are these cavernous spaces coming from?
Alkali Lake.
Yeah. Okay. But I really like the scenes between Charles and Magneto in the prison, because like both of them are, they're stage actors, so they're perfectly suited for those kind of chamber pieces where it's just like the two of them playing off each other. And I did really appreciate seeing like Charles's concern for Eric when he saw that he had been like abused and hurt. He very clearly like was concerned for his friend, and Magneto seemed genuinely regretful of having given up the information on the school, though it took him a while to say it. Like if he had just been like, maybe you should turn around and head right back home.
Is Magneto in that prison in the comics? Do we know this?
Because no,
that felt quite comic booky.
I was going to guess so.
It felt quite like grandiose.
I feel it must have made an appearance at some point, because it shows up in the later movies as well, doesn't it?
I think X-Men's a bit of a blind spot for me.
I really only have sort of like pieces and bits of information. Like we've said previously, there is so much X-Men content that it's really anything that you can imagine. It's probably been in there at some point.
Yeah. I'll Google it.
Yeah,
I'll put it on the Insta.
Excellent. I mean, like most people who regularly read comic books, I have been absolutely all over Ed Piskor's Grand Designs over the past 12 months since he started releasing them, which is like a sort of summary book to the whole of X-Men history.
It's
like released in like Ed Piskor's very sort of signature style and format. He did a long series of books called Hip Hop Family Tree, which is all about like the birth of hip hop, and the evolution of it, and it's like a true sort of retelling of it. But then he's done like the exact same thing for Marvel in the same style, same format, these large books with the like old style paper.
Oh, nice.
It's called X-Men Grand Designs, and it just breaks down everything that like started for X-Men history. I think there's four. It was released over like four issues, but as two larger collected books. And it's just absolutely incredible. So I've been all over that the past year.
This hasn't offered you any additional insight, has it?
Not much.
Now you can see why the director didn't want to take this on.
Yeah.
It's like it's too big.
Yeah.
Too much.
All over the classic X-Force run, And a few years ago, I had a really good foray with Uncanny X-Men, which was great. You know, the aftermath of Scott Summers killing Charles Xavier, which is just badass. But other than that, and a few like Savage Wolverine comics here and there, my X-Men history is just rubbish.
Yeah, which, I mean, I do appreciate about these movies. I mean, it must have been to know that you're taking on a franchise that has all this kind of like back history, and you're really spoiled for choice with like your storylines and everything. At least for the first two so far, even though there's like tons crammed in this film, I would say thus far it has been like really clean storytelling, which I've appreciated. And like in this one, even though you have your big action beats, you know, starting off pretty, you know, well, you've got the first scene obviously, which the White House attack establishes that. You've got the attack on the school and some things that happen later on, but I feel like they didn't sacrifice like the emotional beats, like when Jean and Storm find Nightcrawler in the church, and they sort of have that affected, that really nice conversation. Like, it's so interesting to me that throughout, like, Nightcrawler seems to be a character that's still like really full of hope, even though he's like scarred himself because of his sins, and he, you know, looks the way he does, which makes him always like an outsider to humankind, obviously, but to a lot of mutant kind as well, who potentially wouldn't want to be associated with him because he blows their cover. But I thought that was like a really moving scene. And then, well, we'll talk more about this, but Bobby's scene with his parents. So I've appreciated the sort of clean storytelling that they've been doing for these two movies anyway.
But I just think that I wish they'd just turned the color up a bit.
Yeah.
Like it's all shades of brown.
Well, yeah, everything and blue. Everything becomes a shade of red in that plastic prison when Magneto shoots a man from the inside.
That's so amazing. When Mystique in her human form.
Yeah.
And you forget how stunningly beautiful. I mean, I'm not a big fan of the angle of when she sits down at the table and it's just leg.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not a big fan of that. If we're going to be problematic, that's the one shot so far that I didn't necessarily agree with. But you just forget how stunning she is as an actress and as a human. But that bit where she like took him into the bathroom and then injected his butt.
Yeah.
Like, there's quite a few bits in this film that like you don't understand why something happened until quite a lot later.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
You have to like keep going back and remind us, because there's so many like mini plot bits in this. But I do remember the bit where it's like you got too much iron in your blood, and that really creepy blood filled vest.
Oh, and but you just like you see in Magneto's face where he's like that something's different.
Yeah. Oh,
and
so
he
sinister.
Gets it. It's like, oh.
And just the amount of damage that he can do with like two ball bearings as well, or three ball bearings. Yeah. It's just such a creepy, incredible little bit of a film.
Ugh. Totally.
Yeah. No, I'm all over it, and I really like evil Ian McKellen.
When he's properly sinister, he's great.
I'm very, very much a fan of it. I think there's very few people who can like turn super evil. And when he does it, I'm a big fan of it.
Yeah.
I want more evil Ian McKellen. But he gets out of the prison. You know, we've got the bad X-Men. We've got the good X-Men all tied up, not really doing a good thing. And they, everyone kind of gets split up at this point in the movie before getting X-Men United again. Which is, so we have the... we have the plane scene with Storm.
Oh, that was
Jean Grey.
That was pointless.
Which is a bit
with the tornadoes.
Oh,
running away from the.
Does that happen? No, that happens after they pick everyone back up, doesn't it?
No, it's just.
Oh, is it before
her and Jean and Nightcrawler?
Oh no, it is after they pick everyone back up
because
Rogue falls out of the plane.
Yeah,
before that.
Sorry, I'm jumping ahead.
Is when I was jumping ahead as well, but I just had in my head when Magneto pulls the plane out of the sky.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's all I was focusing on. But before that, we have the scene where they go to... Is it Bobby's house they go to?
Yeah, Bobby Drake's house.
Which is... if I was running away and I was a mutant, I wouldn't necessarily think of going home.
No.
But that's what they do.
But it was because they knew that Storm and Jean had gone to Boston to get Nightcrawler, so they were thinking... let's go to Boston. Has anyone got any money for an Airbnb? No, we'll go to Bobby's parents' house.
Fair. And I mean,
can you imagine Bobby? Can I go have some mates stay over?
Yeah, it's my professor, Wolverine. Just tuck it into
he
the fridge.
He turns up girlfriend. In like a tank top and a down in here.
I'm his teacher.
What does he say? Oh, he says he teaches art. That's yeah. it.
Great first impression.
Yeah, and my girlfriend I can't touch. Oh, I thought that was really weird when Logan gets introduced to Bobby for the very first time at the school. Like, Rogue's really excited to see him, gives him a big hug. I like their relationship. It's nice. And then introduce Bobby and Wolverine and Logan's just straight in there like, how do you two? And they're like, we're working on it. You know, it's just like, oh, why did you ask that question?
Don't ask.
Yeah.
And I think, are we in agreement here that Bobby's brother is the biggest shit in this movie? Like, Stryker's an asshole, but Bobby's brother is the exact kind of person everyone... You know someone who was like that at one point in life.
But dear, I don't know. Like, I had a little bit of a hard time. Like, your own brother? Like, he had to know that the police were going to come in guns blazing. Like, I found that... I mean, I understood it as kind of a plot device and maybe, like, an anger reaction, but... As soon as it was done, I would have liked to maybe seen him show like a little bit of, like, surely that's not how he meant things to go down. Mm. I mean, Bobby's whole family dynamic is quite interesting. I don't want to pigeonhole you, Martin, but there's a very clear parallel that they're drawing on that conversation.
I would wonder how many straight people would get that reference.
Oh, really?
Especially back then. Yeah. I think now the cinema has seen more scenes like that. I don't know. Correct me if I'm wrong. If you guys read it like that, apart from the line, have you tried not being a mutant? The whole rest of it, even like how the parents are sat and they're not really sat together, like coming out, still like my coming out experience and friends who've told me about theirs. Even just the way that their parents were sat, like his dad kind of sitting on like the fireplace. Like, and I remember when I came out to my parents, it was kind of around a dinner table, but my dad was kind of stood in a place where he wouldn't usually be stood, because like you don't want to sit them down. You kind of do it while they're in the middle of a something, but obviously it's a big deal, so they have to kind of stop what they're doing.
Right.
So like seeing his dad like sat on a fireplace is weird, but also really accurate.
Interesting.
I don't know. It read really kind of close to home for me.
Did you feel like it was exploitative of that kind of conversation, or did you feel it sort of matched what?
No, it matched, and I also really liked Rogue's part in it as well. About I think she said something like you should see what he can do or something like that, and it was like she was very much like he's better for being a mutant.
Yeah.
And there's some gay people that I know as well who. And I guess I kind of fall in that camp as well, who think their lives are enriched by their differences. So it played out really, really well. And the kind of the father figure, teacher kind of element of Wolverine standing on the sidelines was I thought really powerful as well. Like, a lot of people have that in their lives. It was done in the film that it was in.
Yeah.
in the year that film came out. I thought it was great. It was really clever.
That's really good.
Yeah.
I guess most people, though, don't bring their asshole friend with them. Like, he was making the situation far worse.
And also, like, I love the bit where he freezes the coffee and the cat licks it.
Yeah.
Like, it's just funny. It's good. It's a good moment.
That was quite good. Although, I do have to say, like, with the, like, Pyro's whole attitude to that conversation, to the environment he's in, I did like that they gave Pyro a beat where he was looking at the family photos, Bobby's family photos, and there clearly was an element of longing that then translated into, like, as teenagers do, like, annoyance, like, I'm gonna wreck this for them type thing. So I thought that was an important moment that I'm
and I also thought the family, it was on the staircase, wasn't it, who was looking at the pictures?
I think so, yeah.
But then did you notice at the end when they're all looking out of the top bedroom window, it was kind of the same structure as the family portrait, but without Bobby in it. I thought that was quite an interesting comparison.
This movie's deep.
it's like this is why I really enjoyed coming back to these, because actually they are quite clever.
If this wasn't called X-Men and it was given like a different name, like, I don't know, Inception, people would be like, it's a master of storytelling.
The first, yeah, it'd be like X-Men colon the first mutants.
Oh, yeah.
You know, if it was, it's a good, you know, it continues the theme of the first one and the theme of X-Men in general that, you know, and what we said, you know, at the start, can humans and mutants share the world? And I think it's just, you know, X-Men's always telling the story of can people with differences get along, I guess. I thought, what do you think of his brother's reaction? Do you think it was like anger that his brother was different, or do you think it was jealousy that he wasn't different, like that he didn't have a mutant power?
I think there is some kind of older younger brother dynamic there, in that like if you take away the mutant part of it, you know, he's gone away to he says a prep school for kind of gifted youngsters, so there might be a bit of jealousy there, and then he's probably getting used to, you know, being the kind of spoiled child of the house, and then it all comes suddenly crashing in, and all that kind of is taken away from him quite quickly, and his brother's even more special, even if it's not a good kind of special. I think it came from a kind of extreme jealousy.
Yeah.
But not jealousy because he wants what he has, but just jealousy that he's getting so much attention. Maybe.
That's interesting. Yeah. I was just really annoyed at him. I was just so annoyed. It's like, oh, you brat. I don't know if that comes from being an older child or what. I just being like, get it together, man. Don't call the cops on your family.
but then I'm also then suddenly wound up again by the police being dicks again.
Ugh.
And then I'm wound up again because Pyro's being a dick on top of that. Yeah. I'm just like, oh, this scene is so frustrating on so many levels.
Yeah.
It escalates quick as well.
So fast.
And Pyro is so extreme.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't just like blow up one cop car to distract everyone to let them escape. Like, he's literally burning people alive.
Yeah.
Like, that's 0 to 150 miles an hour.
That bit where he was, like, holding the fireball, like, down on the cop car to the point where, like, Rogue then...
And you could see the cops inside it, like, screaming. And...
Yeah. Oh, I have such a thing with, like, fire as well. It was, like, really, like, anxiety-inducing. But I really liked that moment of Rogue taking his powers, because that was... Especially coming so quickly on the heels of her and Bobby trying to kiss and that not going well. For her to then have a moment where she takes ownership of her power and uses it in an active way. That's something other than when she healed herself from Wolverine stabbing her. We haven't seen her do, and I think it's the only time she does it in this film anyway.
And she does that, which later on she does that threat where she starts to take off her glove to Magneto, which I love that moment.
Definitely. But I thought she did that really well, like her whole like face when she made the decision. And I was really happy to see her make like an active choice about her powers.
And it almost felt like, because obviously Wolverine gets shot in the head, and she's literally laid next to him. But that moment felt like, you know, when she's with Wolverine, she's protected.
Yes.
And it feels like, okay, he's not here now. I have to kind of, because actually you would expect Bobby to come and ice some stuff, right? Ice versus fire. But here, it's her who steps up to solve a problem, and I think that's really nice.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you think if that that whole scene, so you know, Bobby's scene talking about his powers to his parents, then through to this escalation, do you think if that was, you know, surprisingly, as you've said, that was done so well in 2003, do you think if this movie was made again today that they'd play that scene out in the same way, or do you think we'd see it tell a different story?
I think nowadays you're more likely to have kind of an out and out queer character, so you don't tend to, I don't think you get as many, unless the whole film is about a coming out story. I think, like, in, was it in Spider-Man Homecoming, there's one character who reads kind of queer, is it?
We had sort of said MJ, right?
Yeah, so I think you get more characters like that nowadays who are kind of have a question mark. They've probably got a different hair color and wear a lot of bangles and a bit of leather and are like, have a queer question mark. I think you get that more in cinema now rather than an out and out, I am XYZ. Yeah.
I would sort of see it in this, like if it was done today, kind of playing a bit more into, unfortunately, some of the more racial tensions that have flared up again. Well, I say again, but that are being brought a bit more to the forefront. And I would see that being a narrative that could be really impactful, and that being something that, I mean, it wouldn't be kind of the same coming out conversation, but that being sort of the source of inspiration for tension among different people.
I think you said in last week's episode, the last fortnight's episode, about Storm.
Yeah.
Might have that sort of storyline in this.
Yeah. If this and maybe that's today. Yeah, and I was sort of thinking about, having said that, kind of putting that responsibility on her, like, you're the person of color, you should be kind of leading this conversation, which, like, now that I think about it, is that's not her responsibility. It just it was such an easy kind of line to draw, like, in that conversation between her and the senator. I do find it interesting that she seems to have become a bit more militant, like when she has that conversation with Nightcrawler. She says, like, I don't have any sympathies anymore, like, I'm not like looking, she almost seems to be doing like a kind of like, I'm not looking to protect them anymore. Like, that's kind of the feeling I got from her, and Nightcrawler kind of pushing back against that, being like, you shouldn't be angry, we need to be hopeful, and those types of things. So
I think that's because people started messing around I think that's because people have started messing around with the kids.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yes.
I think she's the most, I think, kind of paternal out of all the X-Men.
Yeah.
Apart from Charles, maybe. So I think once Strikers attack the school, I think that's perhaps where her her kind of want to go the extra mile for humans maybe ends. I don't know.
Nice.
I mean, can we talk about something like action-y?
Yeah. Do you want me to fly through some bits? So, you know what? I'll fly through some talking points. You stop me when you want to say something, right? Magneto finds the gang in the X-Jet.
Oh, yeah.
Brings everyone together.
Everyone came around very quickly to say he, like, almost destroyed New York.
Yeah, they were ready to, like, be there, cool. Weren't they?
Like, you take away, like, their leader, and they're like, we'll have anyone.
Yeah. I have to say, the one thing, though, like, with that scene of, like, so you got the tornadoes, and then Jean, like, diffuses one of the rockets coming for her. And then, like, later Wolverine's like, that was some display of power. And I was like, was it? Like, Storm just pulled down like 19 tornadoes from the sky, and she essentially like flipped a switch in a rocket.
Like, the uses of Storm's power in this film are terrible. Like, she she's just a bit rubbish.
Yeah.
Wolverine. So they hatch a plan. Mm-hmm. Wolverine and the gang, they all enter the lab.
Yeah. Oh.
We both raised our hands at risk. Mystique in the tent pretending to be Jean.
Yes.
Double blow. Yeah.
That was
so good. Are you back on the double blow fight?
And then she kind of turned into
Rogue briefly.
How old Rogue? And then turned into Striker.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, well, she turned
kind of
had
to go at everyone, didn't she?
Yes.
Imagine all of them filming that stuffed in a tent with Hugh Jackman.
Just like, all right, next.
Just get like, Striker in.
Has anyone ever seen Rocky Horror? Have you seen the bit where there's a song and someone's laid down, and then someone, Creatures of the Night, the song's Creatures of the Night, and they all take a turn of like singing a line over.
Oh, yes,
It reminds me of that, but less funny. But because I thought, God, I was really shocked. I was like, Jean's, because I'd forgotten that bit happened. Mm. And I was like, Jean, you sneaky. And I'd forgotten about their really passionate
kiss. Like, later already, on. That was
like,
not
I thought it was a lot
Let's
more.
Not get too far ahead. You said action, not steam.
I mean, that could have been some steamy action.
Yeah.
Jean, sneaky.
So Wolverine, they hatch the plan.
Yep.
Because Magneto and them know where Stryker's lab is. They all sort it out.
And Magneto's never going to double cross anyone.
Yeah.
The end of the lab, they're off to go get Charles back. Yeah, stopping again.
Enter the lab. I just have to say, like, Mystique's, again, her action scene there was so good when she goes in as Wolverine and then just, like, flips out of those handcuffs, kicks everyone's ass, and then slides the door like some sort of sassy Indiana Jones. It was so good. I loved it.
Such a good double cross as
it's great.
Like
also, which I think we've missed, but we talked in the first episode about there being lots of different genres of films referenced. So I thought that one was quite kind of army film-esque kind of action, but then we talked in the first one about some feeling quite thriller-ish. Mm. And I thought the moment where Mystique went in to look at the schematics of, you know, when she kind of broke in and was pretending to be Deathstrike?
Yeah.
That felt quite thriller noir.
Yeah, yeah.
And the kind of the colouring of that was quite green as well. Mm. And that almost felt like a different film. But any bit with Mystique in it's just so compelling, like you never know who's going to be what. And when she walks past,
and there's less orange eyes,
less orange eyes.
That works,
which is good.
Yeah,
the walking past the cleaner scene was pretty cool as well. No, I agree with that one. It happens with my power on again.
Yeah. Go on, go.
Oh, yeah. So they all try and find the kids. They find the kids.
Yep.
Save the day.
Correct me if I'm wrong. I was going to rewind and look at it, but then I just couldn't
There's
be asked.
There's Nightcrawler in the tank.
Yes, yeah. They have absolutely stuffed that up. Yeah, yeah. So did you notice it?
No.
Oh, my God. It is such a big goof. So when Nightcrawler and Storm like find the kids and they look down into the tank, there's a shot of like the kids shouting up to them. But behind the kids, you can pretty clearly see Nightcrawler like squished against the wall. They've obviously cut the wrong sequence of scenes. Like that's obviously when he's supposed to immediately walk forward and be like, poof, I'm here. But yeah, you just see him like squished against. Sorry, I'm acting it out. Squished against the back wall, and it's
because I thought I saw the silhouette and I was like, oh, Nightcrawler must
have already
jump in, and then there might be like a guard there that he has to fight or something.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought it was like a baddie waiting in the shadows, yeah. But then no, it's just
it was just a mistake.
It
was just a mistake. So weird. Anyway,
oy. Well, they find the kids.
Yeah,
that's. Pretty much takes up Jean Grey, Storm, and Nightcrawler for this thing.
These X-Men.
Which is some resource, right?
Want to see some action.
And then Cyclops turns up.
Yeah, brainwashed.
Right? He's all got his thing on the back of his neck and he's all eyes, all everywhere.
All eyes and teeth. Yeah, acting through those teeth.
Him and Jean Grey have a bit of a bust-up.
Yeah.
They break the dam.
Oh, yeah.
Sets that whole thing in motion. More moving parts. This movie is just layers. From this bit on, it's like layers
it's,
and
oh
layers
God, it's
of
so
like
true. Jesus,
things
yeah.
that are happening.
And
that
it's like catch up with us. We're not waiting around for you to.
Yeah.
We're doing plot now.
It's like there's enough happening anyway. Xavier's about to kill all the world.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
He's about to kill all the mutants in the world.
Yeah.
You know, the Striker's doing stuff. Wolverine's fighting someone.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
they're trying to get the kids out as well. Also, the dam's going to break.
Yeah.
Also, Magneto's double-crossing people.
Also, Magneto's double-crossing people. Also, Mystique could be anyone.
Yeah.
Like, I think Mystique was just all those characters.
Maybe.
Like, I think everyone's just in the jet waiting for Mystique.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
Also, Bobby's... not Bobby.
Pyro
is like, I'm leaving the jet. And then
hanging around in the woods.
Also, like, Rogue and Bobby have decided to go somewhere else. And yeah. It's like, just everything. And the speed that it takes them to commute from where the jet's parked to the dam itself
the
is
forest.
Just like,
yeah,
they're there
instant.
And then they're back.
Yeah.
But then I think we get the cool fight scene, which is the Wolverine Deathstrike one.
Oh, yeah. Brutal.
Where they get locked in a room.
Flipping
she's got those really
heck.
Long claws.
Oh, yeah.
Every time she, like, stabbed those through him, especially, like,
in
through
back.
His back. Through his back. That bit where she was, like, underneath him and the grate was just going, like, neat, 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 neat. Like, oh.
He gives really good pain vocals
yes,
as
he
well.
Does. And face. He gives a good pain face as well.
I think because it's the same room, it's appropriate to talk about the little flashback scenes of Wolverine throughout the movie, which is like super. He's like bloody and like, you know,
horrific.
Naked.
Well, yes.
But he's like, they are some of the best scenes, I think, of the whole X-Men and what we call it, the X-Men universe.
Yeah, yeah. I know.
They're so sinister.
Yeah.
They're really well shot as well.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But also, like, and then it's like these horrible surgery things are taking place, but then there are people sipping champagne.
Yeah.
Like, all that is just. And I mean, it's an interesting reveal that he volunteered for this position. And Stryker making allusions to the fact, like, you were crap. Like, you had a shit personality. I didn't do anything about that. Like, you've always had this crap personality. Mm.
I would have loved... I thought her Deathstrike's death was quite sad.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they almost kind of came out like tears and she looked really upset. But I would have... Obviously, there's only one other person that shared that experience with Wolverine, and it's her. And they never had a moment of... Well, she had no conversation with anyone.
Yeah.
But just... I don't know. It just felt like she felt like a miss of a character to develop a bit more backstory of, you know, I don't know if there's much backstory of her in the comics, but I don't know. I felt like there was a kinship there that was no way explored. Obviously, this movie is jam-packed with everything. But even like she could have died with a really poignant line to just say something like, I don't know, if I wanted to die at anyone's hands, I'm glad it was one of my own. You know, like something, I don't know, something to give it a bit more gravitas. They never had that one moment.
But she's not evil, though. She's been mind controlled.
Yeah,
by Strike.
But, yeah, so but I know what you mean. She just shaked it off, like, right at the end.
Yeah. You know,
I don't know. I think you see it. And, yeah, okay, she could have got more lines. Kind of agree on that. But at the same time, I think you see all of that in Wolverine's reaction to having to kill her. I think you can tell how hard it hits him to have to do that, because he realizes what she's been through and that it's not her fault, but she's going to, like, he's got no choice. Yeah. She's going to kill him.
Yeah. But I'd just like to come from her a bit more, I guess. I don't know.
But pumps full of adamantium.
Mm. Oof. Yeah. Brutal.
That's a bad way to go, isn't it?
Brutal.
Yeah, and I mean, you could, with someone with regenerative abilities, and this is something argued lots in the comics and that is played multiple times, is that, you know, there's some part of her probably still alive.
Oh.
I mean, like, no. It's happened to Wolverine before. It's like one little bit keeps you alive, and it takes a long time, but they can regenerate from that. And that's similar things have happened to him before in the comics. Mm. So it's like...
Oh. Oh, you know, it's trapped. Trapped.
Just as one cell.
Yeah.
Or whatever. But, yeah.
That's a really, you know, if we're talking about, like, gross situations, like, Stryker's son. Like, that whole relationship, that whole story that he tells, that you, like, get the reveal from when he's talking to Charles, is just...
He's essentially saying, I hated my son so much, I lobotomized him.
Turned him into this thing.
And the story about his wife killing herself with a drill into a temple.
Oh, stop it.
Like, what?
This movie is dark.
Yeah.
It's so dark.
Like, this film must have been a PG. But, like,
I don't know. There's a lot
like
of
nowadays,
blood.
I would
there's
say,
a
like, was 12A a ranking back then?
Ooh.
I don't know. But I mean, PG-13 definitely was.
I reckon this is a...
I think it might be... Might it be PG-13? I don't know. We could look this up, but we're not going to.
Well, what are the more modern X-Men films coming out as?
I think they're PG-13, yeah, 12A. But like when they wheeled him out, and Charles was like, "Oh my God, your son!" I was just like, "What?" I mean, not this time, obviously, but the first time it was like, "What the hell?" Like that. And he's the way he looked, and then his mind projection of that little girl that was like with him at the very end when everything had really fallen apart, and she's like screaming, saying, "He's gonna be so mad at me." It's like, my God, to have been someone with such power, obviously you couldn't control it and led you to do horrible things, creating these visions, your mom died, you know, mom killed herself and everything, but then to become just like this twisted ruin, terrified of your father, like what that process must have been like is just...
And that's not Legion, is it?
No.
That's not the character Legion.
Though. No, Legion is Charles's son.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's all fine. It's all fine. Don't worry. Don't worry.
He dies. He gets to die.
Magneto's going to come save the day.
No.
Oh, yeah.
Magneto. Here's Magneto walking in. He's walking into Stryker's weird Cerebro room. And he's going to come. And he's going to save everyone. And oh, no. He wants to kill everyone. Yeah.
He's doing some refurbishment of the Cerebro.
Well done, Magneto. You want to kill all humanity. Yeah, little quick touch-up, bit of refurb.
Yeah.
I don't know what moving those panels around does. It changes it from kill mutant settings to... kill human settings.
Well, they helped build it, didn't they?
Yeah.
Do you think Magneto's power is the metal can like read his subconsciousness? So he just has to say, recalibrate this to be a kill human Cerebro? Or do you think his mind has to be like, pick panel up from left D12 and move over to right 74.
Such control of his power that he can almost like meditate the things where he wants it to go.
So it's an unconscious sort of thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Rather than be like
swirly ball bearings around me.
Yeah. But not even to the point of thinking that, just like doing it like you would throw a ball.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You're not thinking release hand now, you're just thinking, I chuck it over there.
Yeah, I thought that as well.
He's clearly evolved his position from the first movie where he wanted to make a small conference of world leaders, mutants.
Mm.
Now he wants to kill all humanity.
Yeah.
So it escalated yet again. Great. The dam's breaking, Wolverine's fighting someone, he's about to kill all mutants, and now he's going to kill all humans. Yeah. And as a human, that's quite scary.
Yeah. Can you imagine just like the pain in your head? just being squished. I mean, they obviously don't show, like, surely there must have been a lot of, like, car accidents, like, plane crash.
Yeah, because, like, you see all the mutants having a moment, don't you, with a headache. You never see it with the humans.
You do see it, yeah, you see it briefly with the humans, like the white figures.
Oh, yeah, of course. And then you see Stryker. And the president as well, don't you?
Yeah,
my bad.
And, yeah, we see it with Stryker, who's, at that point, freshly fucked up by Wolverine.
Yes. Yeah.
Chained to a chopper.
Yep.
And, well, they stop it.
Yeah.
Jean Grey does, like, nothing.
Nothing.
No.
Still yet in this movie.
Yeah.
Storm just makes it cold.
Storm makes it cold, which is, oh, yeah. I mean,
just open a door. You're in, like, the Canadian wilderness. Just open the front door. You go, like, oh, it's a bit cold, isn't it?
Yeah, that's the point, is that Cerebro's locked.
Yeah. I found that very strange as well. I don't know if it was, like, a play up of, like Nightcrawler and Storm's trust, like, that they built, so he was willing to do the jump, but surely it would have made so much more sense for Jean to have to go in there and do, like, mental battle with that other, with Stryker's stunt.
But Storm was the one that was like, I can take this, but she didn't know the situation in there.
No.
Oh, yeah.
It's too much. It's too much, but, like, I'm so frustrated that I felt like, other than a couple of things that Jean did here and there, I never got the sense that she was a powerful mutant ever.
No. She was always, like, the rubbish one that you didn't want to be, I think.
Yeah.
I did find the ending, like, the end kind of act of this film a little bit on the rewatch. Maybe it's because I'm used to such big Marvel set piece finishes now. But, like, it was so complicated. Mm. You couldn't just kind of sit back and enjoy the spectacle. It was like plot, plot, plot twist with Magneto, plot, plot, blah, blah, and I was a bit like, I've not actually, apart from the fight with Wolverine and Deathstrike, there wasn't any other bit that I really enjoyed in the final bit. It was just, when you've sat through such a long, it's not that long, it's like 2 hours something, 2 hours, 10 minutes of that, when it gets to the end, I kind of just want it spelling out for me, and I kind of want just the good guy to defeat the bad guy.
Yeah.
Mm. But it was still, like, right up until the end, it was just hard work.
Yeah.
Well, hard work for Jean Grey as well.
Yeah.
So
they leave. They leave Stryker's son to die. Like, they just leave him in that room to get squished, which, I guess, you know, fine. It's weird, right? Like, it's weird. They just left him there. That doesn't seem like the kind of people they are. It wasn't his fault.
I guess the question would be, would Stryker's son let us leave?
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
You know, because
so brainwashed.
You know, Storm's managed to kind of overcome him then. She can't keep that up. She can't make it cold forever. And then if they go outside, will he, like, you know, make someone crash the jet?
Yeah,
you know,
fair enough.
He seems like a big risk in a very already risky circumstance.
Yeah. No, that's fair enough.
And, yeah, risks Jean Grey out there breaking waves.
Again, is that, like, I mean, so, my memory of the creation of Dark Phoenix involves this thing in space, exploding spaceships, all this sort of stuff. That's how she dies and gets reborn. This, again, it was just like, what? I'm sure there are mutants that are very easily able to just, like, part the water.
Or Nightcrawler could have just been out there with her and zipped them back to the ship.
She wouldn't let him or whatever when he tries to briefly do it, and he's like, she's not letting me. It's like, why? Why?
And she doesn't, correct me if I'm wrong, she doesn't have premonitions, does she?
So it's unclear, because there are a few times in the movie where she says, I have, like, a feeling something bad's going to happen. She seems to get, like, she can tell the water's coming well before anyone can see it.
Could she have read the future where no matter what they did, you know how Doctor Strange can see all the variables and knows that there's only one route to success? Do her powers allow her to have assessed, you know, could Nightcrawler, he couldn't have got all 10 of them out
maybe
in time?
That's a good way to read it, actually, because there definitely were hints throughout the film that she does have strong premonitions about the future. So, yeah, it could be she's like, this is exactly how it has to play out. And that does make me feel better about the situation, because otherwise it's just annoying.
Or maybe it's like she's had some good Wolverine love in, and I said, I've got to go back to Cyclops. Get me out. I'm going.
Oh, no. Oh, poor Scott.
I feel like they could have come up with something else.
Yeah.
It felt an overreaction to a not too bad. The stakes had been a lot higher in a lot more of the film than just the plane not taking off.
Yeah, like it's going to get wet.
It's going to get, it's essentially going to get, and they can all swim?
Yeah.
Like it didn't, yeah, it was like,
I mean, obviously it's a more pressured situation that, but yeah, no, I agree. It definitely felt like there was more threat earlier.
Or even, you know, if they had taken Stryker's son out and he was attacking the jet and the only way to stop him was to drown him with the dam breaking.
Yeah.
Or you know, if the stakes had been a bit higher, I'd have understood the sacrifice, but I don't know. People don't really, I don't know. We've not seen that many people die in these films apart from faceless.
Minions.
Army.
Yeah.
Cops.
I feel like this is the bit of the movie where Storm could have done more. Let's list loads of
like
things
wind.
That Storm could have done to save Jean Grey. Yeah. Really strong wind.
Yeah.
A tornado right around the spot where Jean Grey was standing, but Jean Grey's in the eye of it, so it's completely still.
Yeah. But
that's
surely
fine.
Doesn't water come from rain so she could control it? Anyway?
Put Jean Grey in an ice cube and let her swim down the river. David Blaine was in an ice cube for like a week. So Jean Grey can last like 20 minutes, right?
Yeah. Water spout, suck up all the water.
Yeah, a localized fire.
she can't set fires. Oh, lightning, I guess.
Yeah.
Anyway.
She could have sent some lightning down to chop some trees down, which Jean Grey could have held on to.
Yeah.
As a boy?
Earthquake right in front of Jean Grey.
You get earthquake stuff. That's not weather.
It's debatable.
Debatable. but yeah.
And was Charles incapacitated? Is that why he couldn't do anything?
So she like briefly invades his mind to set, which also, I guess he's been weakened by the recent mind invasion.
She says that there's no other way or something?
Yeah, so there's no other way. I know what I'm doing. She says, like, goodbye to her. Is she and Cyclops married at this point?
Wait, Bobby could have frozen all the water.
Yeah, I don't think he's strong
enough. Bobby stands in front of her and builds an ice shield in front of the two of them while she stops all of the water.
Nightcrawler in, out.
Yeah, bang, Nightcrawler in, out. Done.
Ugh. But that, like, so are Jean and Scott married at this point? Like, she mentions marrying the good guy, but I don't know if they're actually married yet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Wolverine could have stabbed the water.
But she, like, she says her goodbye to her husband, presumably through Charles, and it's so awkward.
Yeah.
It's so awkward. Like Charles with his eyes closed, saying goodbye to Cyclops.
Yeah.
Cyclops' teeth. That was some intense teeth acting happening.
Yeah, there was a lot of teeth. And when he was hugging Wolverine, that was a bit like...
Oh, yeah. That was
It's like, Wolverine, didn't you, you know, didn't you just... You can still taste her on my lips.
I mean, I would watch that.
Yeah, so then the movie ends. I mean, we get the president scene, but whatever.
Before we sort of talked about that.
Yeah.
But, I think we've ripped on it a little bit
in
the last 10 or 15 but you know what, it was still, I was still like, oh my
yeah,
god,
yeah, I was riveted.
Yeah, it's great. It's
still,
this
there.
Is great. I'm having a great time.
Yeah, so Anna, is it staying or going?
Oh, it stays.
It's staying, and I feel like we need to champion these films more as a rewatch to people.
Yeah, you know, if you're listening to this because you remember the X-Men movies but you're not watching along with us,
now's the time.
Yeah.
Grab yourself a DVD player.
Yeah,
right. Get yourself...
Put it on iTunes.
Or iTunes, or other
movie
streaming services.
Yeah, support your local charity shop.
Go down to your local charity shop, Get yourself the Cerebro collection.
That's a thrift shop for our American listeners.
Yeah, one of them. Get yourself... Do they not have charity... Thrift shops run for on behalf of charities, or are they just...
No, it's the same thing. It's just what you commonly refer to them as. Like, a thrift shop could be... Goodwill is, that's like, good. The charity shop.
Well...
I'm going to get my bag.
Exactly.
Get in my pocket.
All right. Okay.
Okay, you're all punch drunk, I think.
Go get yourself your Cerebro collection in your pocket. Get yourself X-Men 1, X-Men 2, X-Men 3, Wolverine.
The Wolverine.
The Wolverine.
Logan.
Logan and whatever comes after that. On DVD, on the legal download, or however, you know, however else you want it displayed to you.
Watch with us.
Pop it in. Watch along with us. The next time out, we'll be watching and discussing X-Men 3.
Last Stand.
The Last Stand. Oh, although it's the third movie in like a 9-movie franchise. Yeah. But this is the last stand, guys. No more stands.
Oh, God.
And it was just Jean Grey's last stand as well. So, you know,
You know, in season one where you'd go, what was the line you'd do? But you're not king.
Oh, yeah, Odin. Yeah. But, yeah, you're not.
Can you please rehearse? It's the juggernaut, bitch.
Oh, yeah.
The next time.
We'll get that on.
It's just a bit of Vinnie Jones. I'm so excited. Oh, I'm so excited.
God, this is stupid.
This is gonna. I'm looking forward to this. Oh,
so, have you had any more thoughts before we go? What's gonna be your mutant power?
Oh nope! I need another podcast to think about it. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Does it have to be one? I think we should be limited to a power that we've seen in this trilogy.
Okay. Oh, excellent.
Because it can't just be like you have an endless bank account.
That's not a mutant power. Oh, my cells are mutated to have a lottery.
But yeah, so it's got to be someone. It can be a goodie. You know, it can be a. You can have Magneto's power, but not use them for villainy.
Gotcha.
So like,
okay. This is good because like there are a ton of powers we get introduced to in the next movie. So yeah. This will be a good question.
I think we should ask our followers on Instagram.
What power?
I'll put one of those question stickers on.
Yeah. What's the worst time to get your mutant powers?
Oh, that's it. Well, surely it depends on what power you've got.
Well. What's the worst time to get your mutant powers?
Well, we know when Rogues was. Their first time.
So, yeah, go follow A Marvelous Lunch Break on Instagram.
Yep.
But, Anna, where can listeners find you?
They can find me on Instagram, Anna Marvelous, 2 N's, 2 L's.
Same question.
Martin Loves, Twitter and Instagram.
And I'm at DVM Preston across Twitter and Instagram. Please subscribe to us, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, any of that stuff. If more of this in your ears on a fortnightly, we'll be back in 2 weeks' time. Thank you very much for listening. Go watch along with us for X-Men 3 The Last Stand. And have a great fortnight. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
One last quick thing. If there was a post-credits?
Well, I feel like we almost kind of got it. Like when it's like the Phoenix like rushing through the water. Like they definitely could have... Well, I guess it needed to go along with Jean's voiceover. But yeah, I think it would be something else. Maybe more Phoenix-y. Otherwise...
It's maybe, a juggernaut.
Yeah, or something with Angel, maybe.
Okay.
And his dad.
What's the kid called? The bald-headed kid?
Oh, yeah. I have no idea.
But you know, I can't remember what the film is at the end of, but we first see Scarlet Witch and Quicksilver in those little cages.
Yeah.
I think there might have been a moment like that with the bald kid.
Yes, I think you're right.
Very good. Right, well, tune into The Last Stand and see if we get a post-credits.
Yeah.
Maybe not. I can't remember.
I can't remember.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.